Welcome in, everybody. It's All Pro Lines. I'm Kostaki Economopoulos. Football comedy talk. That's what we do here in this space. We got a lot to talk to you guys about. I'm happy to be back. It's been a minute. So thanks for coming in. Actually, we have a few people here watching, and you can watch it on Facebook Live when we do the recordings. It's a little sporadic in the off season, but we're still figuring out the schedule. We do about once a month in the off season, and of course, weekly during the season. Thanks for coming back and putting us in your ear holes and all that stuff. Lots been going on for me personally. We'll cover that briefly. We'll do some jokes and we'll bring in my buddy Todd McComas. He's a great stand-up comic. We used to travel around and do stuff together. It'll be nice to talk to Todd. He's now a true crime podcaster, among other hats he wears, and he'll tell you all about that. And we'll talk a little Colts and a little Falcons and a little draft. I'm just back from the road. I had a great trip. Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was a bit of a throwback. It's a beautiful club called the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. And it's kind of between a few Bob and Tom markets and not really close enough to any of them for me to be much of a draw. But it was kind of a throwback. It was like it reminded me a little bit of the Atlanta Punchline back in the day. It's like great crowd, smart, good layout, good sound, and most of the people came because they know and love the club. And it was really a pleasure. And I played poker a couple of nights with this really cool community of characters, man. I got there the first night. The shows were freaky early. They were at 7:15. So even on a Thursday, like at 9 o'clock, I'm free. I'm like, oh, okay, go play some cards. There are these weird little poker rooms that are, they're essentially charity situations where they have a handful of rotating charities and a big percentage of the house take has to go to charity. So there's this cluster of different little rooms, where they play cards for charity. There's a profit margin as well, but a cut of it has to be for charity. And that this one room, they've been playing together, any given night, there's like 23 people in this place, but there's about 200 of them who sort of over the course of about a decade are the regulars who play there together all the time. And it's funny, when I got there, there was a guy who was kind of hosting the table and he was sort of busting my balls and introducing me as the new guy and, kind of showing off the room. He said, it's the best 1-2 game in the country. And I was a little like, yeah, okay, whatever. But I have to say, he is a guy who raises money for independent journalism. There were some really thoughtful characters in this place, and a singer and a drug dealer and a science award winner. And they all sort of like know each other and love each other. And there's this sort of interesting amount of respect and inside. I really loved it. It was just so cool. So the comedy and the poker and the camaraderie and the scene, I've been enjoying it all lately. It's been really fun. Let's see who we got in the Jerry Oliver. What's up, Heather? Good to see you guys. Thanks for coming and doing this. We appreciate it. I appreciate you. I don't know why I say we so much. It's basically me. I appreciate you. So Andreas and I are going to the draft this week. I'm excited. My bro, we went last year to Vegas and it was so much fun. The draft is weirdly interesting because it's just a bunch of people who love football. There's not a game, but everyone has their jersey on and they know what they're rooting for. And they know all the details about what's going on and they're into it. And when it's time for the Bears to draft, you find the guy that's wearing the Bears jersey and you chat with him about what he wants. And then you watch the thing with him and then you're like happy or sad with him. And it's just cool. There's a weird camaraderie there too. I was trying to explain this to somebody and somebody said, oh, it's like football Comic-Con. I think it is like that. I think it's just a bunch of people who have the same interest in a thing. And they're like celebrating their love of the thing. It's fun. And routinely, the NFL draft gets better ratings than the NBA playoffs. It gets more viewers than a World Series game. It's become a big thing. And the travel around to the different cities experiment is definitely working, man. It has created so much hype. And Kansas City. We're going to eat some barbecue and drink some beer and talk about life and root for the Falcons. All right, let's
do some 2 minute drill.
All right, I pledged on Bob and Tom to do a version of this joke every year. I'm a man of my word. We're going to do this one tomorrow morning. The NFL draft has been held annually since 1936, like Jimmy Carter's penis. Happy birthday, Jimmy. a lot of great tight ends in this class. That's something that you could say when you're a college football draft analyst, but not when you're a college professor. You don't want to say, there's a lot of great. Yeah, that's no. Yeah. All right, this next joke is from 1972. A lot of buzz about Anthony Richardson, who blew up the combine. He broke the quarterback record for broad jump. 8 broads. All right. He threw 24 touchdowns in his college career. That's a pretty small number. The least for a first-round quarterback since Michael Vick. That's a true stat. You guys know it's not the size of the dog in the fight. Hello. Oh, yeah. 24 touchdowns. That would get the Broncos through like a season and a half. That's plenty of touchdowns. We might see history this week. Probably the first time we ever have black quarterbacks go number 1 and 2 overall. Jimmy the Greek and Rush Limbaugh are probably going to roll over in their graves. Colts are looking for a quarterback. This is the 25th anniversary of the Colts picking Peyton Manning first overall ahead of Ryan Leaf. Almost Ryan Leaf. That was a big debate at the time. I don't know if you guys remember. The whole city dodged a bullet that day. Here's a joke I can't do on Bob and Tom. The only other indie institution to dodge a bullet like that was Ron Sexton. For those of you who get it, you get it. Okay. Look it up if you need to. Help your neighbors. At this point, the Colts should just suck for 3 more years until Arch Manning comes out of college. Right? March down to the bottom of the division. You suck for Luck. Right? March for Arch. Where's Andrew Luck's kid? He's probably available soon. Right? He'll be great for 6 years. They quit right before the season. Well, next year, Marvin Harrison Jr. is coming out of the draft. They could just rebuild the whole thing, just make it a family. Bryce Young is a presumed number one overall pick. He's 5'10". My daughter is taller than that, literally. 14 years old. She can't dodge linebackers, but she can sidestep some responsibility. You know what I'm saying? She's the teacher did. Why don't you just do your fucking history assignments already? Okay. Speaking of short, Oklahoma just unveiled a statue of Kyler Murray. Well, it's not a statue exactly. It's a figure taken off of a vibrating football game. It's not big. It's not big at all. All right. The brother of Aaron Hernandez was arrested for throwing a brick at ESPN headquarters. Still by a wide margin, the good brother. A lot of quarterback news. Just days before the draft, Aaron Rodgers still hasn't reached a deal with the Jets. At this point, he's kept more New Yorkers waiting than the subway. They say the talks have re-engaged. Yeah, because it always works out when Rodgers is engaged. Yeah, that definitely ends well for everybody. They're arguing over the price of a guy famous for giving you a discount. So you'd think we could sort it out by now. Cam Newton's talking about a comeback. He says there aren't 32 quarterbacks better than him, and he is right. There are 62 quarterbacks better than him right now. Jimmy Garoppolo said he doesn't want to be given anything. He wants to earn it. Yeah, says the guy bathing in a waterfall of easy pussy. He doesn't want to be given anything, this guy. Baker Mayfield said, I'm not going to try to be Tom Brady. I'm going to be me. Yes, and that's why the paychecks are going to be a lot smaller. Tom Brady just became minority owner of the Las Vegas Aces. All right. I've got several questions there. One, minority owner. Why? I'm not an expert in modern society, but I'm pretty sure that Tom Brady could buy outright anything I've never heard of. You could buy it yourself. Why are you going to be part owner of the Las Vegas Aces, which I had to look up? It's a WNBA team, which is the answer to the question, how can you make basketball less watchable? Take away the dunking. All right. It's a joke, ladies. It's just, all right. We'll close on this one. This is a recycled version of a joke I've been doing for years. Falcons coach said he expected Desmond Ridder to take the next step. Great. We're still waiting for Johnny Manziel to take the next step. It's a decade later. He still hasn't completed 12 steps. Johnny Manziel. And with that, are there any other jokes we need to do? Nah, that's enough jokes. We got the jokes. We got my boy Todd McComas here. Let's just bring him in. You know him and love him from the Bob and Tom Show. We'll just chat it up here live on the air. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Good to see you.
Good, buddy. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Look at this. We didn't even do any prep, and our heads are the appropriate size and height. We got the right. We did it.
We're so symmetrical right now.
Look at you, professional broadcast. So, Todd, I met you at the. I met you in Indianapolis, but was it at Morty's?
Yes, it was at Morty's, and the old Morty's on 96th Street.
Right.
I was a baby, like a baby comedian, an old guy to be starting comedy at 38. Right, yeah. But right. I think that's why you took me on the road. You were the first to take me on the road and pay me money or get me paid money.
And I didn't know that.
I don't think it had a lot to do because I wasn't funny yet. And like, I didn't know how to do comedy properly, but I was a real adult. So I could imagine someone in your shoes then, like, it's hard to find a real adult to ride in the car with you for a long time that you would enjoy. So
I did enjoy you very much right away, but that's not why. You definitely stood out from the pile of the local comics. There was a certain, I mean, it might be age oriented, but there was a certain gravitas about you. Like, you seemed to, you did feel like a grown up to me. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I do think of you as like a kid brother, even though like we're roughly the same age. Like in comedy, you were so much younger than me. Right.
So much younger. Yeah. And I learned a lot. I mean, but you know, gosh dang it. I don't know if I even had a year on when you took me out. And like the learning experience, because you had an audience, Bob and Tom people, and to see you like, to see someone truly manage a show and people that came to see them, and you know, you're regarded as one of the pros, like the way you conduct yourself. Like I was like, okay, this is how I do it. Everybody else is just getting high and you know, and drinking until 6 a.m. and getting up a half hour before they got ahead of the club the next day. Like it was a real learning experience to be able to consume how to be an adult and do this job.
That's a bunch of nice words, man. I'm happy to hear that's your perspective on it. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's funny. I guess it's all relative, right? Like I feel like there's guys who are so much better at keeping their heads down and working hard at some of the details than I am. I'm like, I don't know how to. But yeah, I mean, the sea of comics are out there fucking around. And last night, like, I came home late. I should have done a little more prep for the podcast. So it's all like, it's all a sliding scale of all the things. That's cool, man. Those were fun days. I forgot too that was a real with Bowers. That was a real drink fest. That whole scene there.
I tell you that 3 years of being part owner in three comedy clubs that were all 2 hours from each other and living, by the way, living in an apartment when we moved locations, by the way, we bought out the old Don Pablo's and we moved like just a little south. I wanted to rebrand it as Don Pablo's Comedy Club. Nobody else would go for it, but I lived in an apartment with another buddy comedian in the same parking lot as that comedy club.
What? So, I didn't know that.
You talk about, I mean, probably the most enjoyable couple years of my life, but also could have killed me. I mean, we had unlimited access to our own bar.
Your own bar. Free booze and you're walkable to the house.
It was quite a run. I remember like being there and, you know, you get your party comedians that come through sometimes, like, you know, partying shirtless with Burt Kreischer until like 6 a.m.
Oh, God.
And Brian Regan and all these people. And then, you know, that was a good thing was beyond that, though, we got to book our friends like you and the people we just really enjoyed that we considered family.
Right. So, Gary Goldman, you got to just handpick your favorite acts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it was a good time. Unfortunately, we just really, really, we were really, really bad at business. And that evidently that's a requirement for longevity.
Comedy is almost impossible to make a profit at being a comedy club owner. That's not you guys as much as it is the situation, right?
It is. And plus, like, when your ownership triad has, like, a combined $500 in savings, you know, when you have a bad week or a bad month, there's no reserves to bring in. And evidently, you just run out of the ability to obtain loans at some point. So...
What did you learn from being on that side of the desk in the business? I feel like most comics have no idea what it's like to run a club. They have no idea how hard it is and all the details involved.
I tell you, you know, it's harder than ever to own a club. But if it weren't for that, I do think if I had another run, what I learned from the many mistakes we made would be valuable to, you know, possibly achieve an success at it again. Because what I learned was you really got to, unfortunately, put your personal tastes on the back shelf.
That's interesting.
You really got to integrate the people that you love that don't necessarily draw enough to really... knock it out of the park for you on a particular week. You really got to integrate the people you love properly within that schedule, mixed with them, and then finding these really focusing now these podcasters, like people that have a podcast following. That was kind of a thing when we were running it.
It was emerging. Yeah. Right.
But now, like I see now, like clubs now could really take advantage of, and I'm not a believer of you know, headlining TikTok comics and like on a weekend show, but they do draw. They bring in their own 200 or 300 people and can sell out, you know, one nighter. Now you have that ability to book Monday to Thursday with shows like that. That was always your weakness.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because you were open 7 days a week and your, you know, whoever your landlord is doesn't discount your lease price based on the fact that you're only open 3 or 4 days a week. So now you have an opportunity to let them string together a whole week of one-nighters, and you can have them on a Tuesday and sell 300 tickets.
Oh, that's a great idea. Have Josh Arnold for the weekend and then have the wackadoo act on Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever.
Right. And you don't mix the two things so that, you know, because the danger of a TikTok comic can be they don't have a strong enough set to be a true headliner in this industry. And if you put them on a weekend show, people that don't know them show up and they're like, oh, this is the first time I've ever been to a comedy club. This sucks.
Yeah.
And they never come back. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's a great answer. Did you guys do any of that kind of stuff? Do you ever do like a Fat Tuesday or any of the, you never had a weird, like other night?
We had our best performing product was a partnership we had with this buddy of mine, Ike, and he booked a show called Straight Up Sunday. And it started as a one Sunday a month show. And it was all urban acts that were just fantastic. And, you know, had their own following. They would go on a circuit and just really sell out this one night thing. And we should have capitalized on that more. That was another thing. Like that was, it was something that we considered almost when it was too late and tried to bring him in as a partner to expand that brand. And I think he looked at our books and was like, no, I'm not getting sucked into that. But and he still does well nationally. But that, other than that, we tried several things. We tried these local brands that were going. We developed our own Tuesday show based on our little podcast nobody was listening to. Like 8 great comics that were on this interactive show that was kind of a competition where everybody had a different challenge that you didn't know of until showtime. Like, oh, hey, you can only do crowd work and you wouldn't be a crowd work comic. or you can only do 5 minutes of jokes you've never done on stage before. And by the way, we know your jokes, so don't cheat. And if you run out of jokes, you have to just make shit up. Like stuff to build like a gym to make you a better comic, like work on your weaknesses.
Yeah.
But also it was really fun, but it had its like 20 loyal people that came every Tuesday, and that was about it. But four of those people were Pat McAfee, his brother, and his mom and dad, and that's how we got to know him. So
it did
work out well for a while.
Yeah. Well, I didn't plan to ask you about this, but you do. It is one of the most interesting stories in modern comedy is the Pat McAfee explosion into the universe. And you were there with a front row seat to it. You know, tell us about that.
Man, we call that first summer of getting acquainted with Pat, the summer of Pat. It was single Pat and, no girlfriend, no wife or anything. And
handsome, famous, rich, single Pat. That must be a nice life.
Just starting stand-up comedy. Like, he was so, like, at that time, so into comedy. Right. And he was naturally good at it. You saw him back in those days. And he wanted to hang around comics. He never got that experience before. And he would come to the club. Even, like, sometimes in the off-season, he would show up in the middle of the day. And he and I and Sean Latham would just go to the club and just hang out and drink beer and talk shop. He would on a whim. Here's a funny story. Sean Latham, a buddy of mine, and Chris Bowers, we had booked this show in Myrtle Beach. There's that little club right on the boardwalk there, and it's a weird club because it's just like tourists just stop in and they don't really know what's going on. But we booked this show because it paid enough. You had a free like 3 day weekend in Myrtle Beach,
right?
So Pat wanted to hang out this one weekend, and we were like, oh, we got this show. And he's like, well, can I go? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, let me work some things out, and I'll get back to you. He calls the next day, and he goes, all right, I got us a private jet, and and then all these other people are going to come. We're great people, like the guy that owns Kilroy's, which is our big, sports pub here in Indianapolis, the guy that owns Kincaid's Meat Market. And all these cool, interesting people. So like 8 of us go for this weekend on a private jet where each of us as comics are going to be splitting like $900. And we arrive in a private jet and we show up for the shows in a stretched SUV limousine. And we get out and the manager's like, who the fuck are these guys? And we just had a blast. We just rocked. And then the last night, Pat was like, hey, can I do a guest set or something? We're like, yeah, of course. But also, why don't you just be the headliner and we'll open for you? And he was like, really? I don't want to do that to you guys. We're like, it'll be a blast. He's like, okay, I'll put a tweet out. He puts a tweet out like the morning of, I think. And there were and he wasn't like who Pat is now as a celebrity. Right, right. He was pretty much just one of the most famous guys in Indiana. But there were enough Colts fans in Myrtle Beach to come in and pack out this show on a whim based on one tweet that he put out like at 11 a.m. for the show that night. And it was incredible. It was so much fun. He somehow found a person who juggles fire for after the show. They had this cool patio behind the bar, and there was this lady juggling fire. There was a street magician doing magic and shit. It was wild. It was so much fun. And that's where I think the chemistry came for Sean and I to start opening for him on his tour. And at these big theater shows, and then eventually, him asking me if I wanted to retire because he was going to retire and start podcasting and doing radio for Barstool Sports. And then 8 months after that was in, he went off on his own, and I stayed with him. And, I don't know if I helped build this team, but I was there for it. And, I was his first person that he brought into that fold business-wise, and we just had a blast. And then, unfortunately, for me, it went totally sports, this product did, and it needed to, because obviously this is, it's ended up where it is now. Right. And that was my weakness. I couldn't hang with this team and him. You know, he has this team of just genius, you know, researchers of sports and talking about sports. All these young guys were just phenomenal. They could have worked anywhere, any sport, ESPN anywhere, and in any capacity. And now he's surrounded by it. But it was leaving me behind. You know, it went less comedy, more sports, even though it's, you know, a funny presentation of sports talk.
Right.
But right. I was like, man, I'm getting old. I'm the dumbest guy in the room. You know, I'm just going to go try to do my own thing. And he was very generous about that. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
What a story. He's such an interesting, I mean, he's one of those guys that just seems like everything he touches turns to gold. It's just astounding. All of his efforts are just like explosively successful.
I call it instinctive genius. Like there's this instinctive genius that people like him have, and it's just an innate way of knowing what's going to work and what doesn't. Like he always makes this joke. I don't know if he ever put his finger on it like that, but he would always joke around that if I like this, most people are going to like this. I have a very unsophisticated palate, he used to say. And so he thought, if I'm into a movie, 90% of America is going to like this movie, for instance. And I there's something to it, man. He just knows what's going to take off and what's not. Like, right. I can't remember him ever having a miss, to be honest.
It's amazing. It's really, I mean, especially in comedy, because we know you wander around and it's like you keep trying things and nothing works, you know?
Yeah.
Creatively and business-wise, both of them are like, you're in the dark, like feeling around. It's kind of the nature of what the craft is. And he was just a rocket ship. I mean, yeah. Even some very simple, like insights or bits of advice from him might stay with me. The one I remember him kind of busting balls with Latham is like, why are you driving 6 hours to make $200 telling jokes? We trying to build an audience that way? He's fuck that. Stay home, build an audience on the internets, and then go. It was like, it's just such a simple concept.
It was, and it was a little ahead of its time, really, right. Then, you know. Right. Now I think a lot of people realize that because we have TikTok comedians that, right. You know, are selling out shows. But, yeah, you know, I just don't know what, you know, I can't imagine. We're used to 10% of things working out successfully, where he's like, no, nah, it's 90%, right? Like you very rarely miss. No, you miss a lot.
All right, let's talk some football. We got the draft this weekend. Where'd you grew up there, right? You're an Indiana boy.
I am, you know, and I'm old enough that I remember when we made the acquisition from Baltimore and, you know, back in the Harbaugh days, Captain Cardiac, you know, we called him because we were horrible, but we had this guy who was just all guts and he got us to the playoffs a couple times, almost took us to a championship at one point, you know. Right. And it was fun back then. Now, you know, I would love to have those days back where you were just constantly the underdog and you appreciated wins you shouldn't get versus the most winning decade of NFL history that happened so long ago that we still hang our hat on as we're a good franchise.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We haven't been able to obtain it since. And it's so depressing because
now you have high expectations.
Yeah, like we always think of ourselves, even though I think the rest of the country doesn't think of us this way, as a winning franchise, as a top team. And we're third in the AFC South. No, we're not. We haven't been that in a long time, but it's still stuck in our heads. It's the craziest thing.
It does. It makes sense though that you would feel, I mean, you're right. Like, Michigan's felt that way for the last 10 years, and they've been terrible just until recently, you know. Mm-hmm. But the history and the branding and the memories and you get imprinted with the team. You know, I think the Cowboys fans have been that way for 25 years now, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
But you're the Cowboys. You know, I mean, we're talking about Troy Aikman here, you know, like the, we're talking about Roger Staubach. We, you know,
right.
That's what's in your bones about the team. Right. Yeah. It makes sense that you have that. Yeah. It, and one of the joke setups I did 20 minutes ago, it's the 25 year anniversary of drafting Peyton Manning this year. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And you know, it was tragic for us that the decision to not give Luck a year under Peyton's tutelage, you know, just one more year here and let Luck learn for a year from him and to let him go to Denver and then see him win a goddamn Super Bowl. Like, right. That was so sad. And we hated it. And I really think that might have, I don't know if that would have changed Luck's course or not, you know? Mm. And I Luck obviously was, I mean, he was a specimen. I mean, he had loads of potential and, you know, he did well, but what he could have been, he just seemed like he was just missing something upstairs, you know, like he just didn't have that thing. And maybe it was just simply, I'm a genius. And, once I got hurt really bad one time, I'm like, oh, this career choice makes no sense anymore.
Yeah,
you know, right. I don't want to end up strung out on painkillers and whatever, you know, into the peak years of my life,
yeah,
intellectually. And, you know, and he left, but you know, to see, do you ever see that clip when, you know, he gets pulled from the game and Pagano is on the sidelines and Luck keeps chirping in his ear. Like we were down like, I don't know, 40 points or something at that point. But you know, Luck was having a bad run there that third quarter or whatever. And he got pulled just like, ah, still let you get hurt. And he just kept saying, let me get out there. Just let me get back out there. I got to make up for what I did. I can't leave the game that way. And then Pagano just in typical Pagano fashion, just turns to him cool as a cucumber. And he says, now, Andrew, what do you think would happen to my job if we're down 30 some points and I bring you back in the fourth quarter to blow your knee out?
Like, right.
He's,
yeah,
like, and he just looks at him and looks like, okay, that makes sense. And he just walks off. Like he used to have that fire, and you know, getting hurt, I think just took it out of him.
It's interesting. I feel like, I mean, from, again, you were a lot closer to it. It felt like from a distance, like, I mean, he was one of the top prospects ever out of college. I mean, he had the size and the shape and could make every throw. He was all the things. He was a smart kid and, like, you know, grounded. And but it looked to me from a distance like the one thing he lacked was that sort of traditional quarterback leadership charisma. He seemed like he was a weirdo. He had a little,
yes,
of Cutler-esque sort of like distance from the social situation where he was just like good at what he did, but he wasn't really like dialed in to be a leader type.
Right. You know? Where Peyton Manning could you know, I mean, he was a true general, right?
He, like, could be a CEO of any company. Right.
Everybody loved him. It didn't matter, right, what your background was, ethnicity, right, religious, right, beliefs, whatever. You could relate to that dude and get behind anything that he was spewing. But where, if your other guy's like, hey, you guys want to play Dungeons and Dragons? You know, you're like, all right, you know, I'm not pumped up right now with you. So I don't know if we're going to come back or not. So you know, he was missing that for sure. He was an odd duck, you know. Who knows? Maybe a little on the spectrum, you know, just off a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
That probably comes with the genius level IQ, you know, a lot of times. And that was just his thing. He wasn't a relatable dude to hang out with and have some beers and rally behind.
Just the beard choice. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. It sort of speaks to the world of like, I don't care about social norms. Yeah. This is what I like.
You look like a captain for the North during the Civil War. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, that kind of beard.
Yeah. Amish. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
All right. Mm. Well, let's do. Let's see. Let's do. We've been talking. Let's do this segment. You'll catch on.
Now okay. It's time for which comes first. Oh yes, it's time for which comes first. Now tell me, will this happen before that happens? It's time for which comes first.
I love that jingle, by the way.
That's our best hit. That's my friend Glenn. It's his best work.
Nice.
And Aaron. Aaron probably was directing the whole thing. Anyway, so which comes first? Colts playoff win or Falcons playoff win?
Mm.
We got two shitty teams we're looking at right now.
Yeah. I'm going to say the Falcons. Now, not having a deep understanding of your front office like I think I do with the Colts, but so I'll just base it on what I believe is what their mindset is at the Colts organization, and that is and has always been, unfortunately, you know, I got to sit and hear these people talk, you know, when I worked for the Pat McAfee show, and very nice people, very lovely people that, you know, when Frank Reich was there and of course the GM, Chris Ballard, very, very nice people, very much prioritizing the way they do things by creating a perfect culture, in their opinion, from the inside the locker room out. And that culture is very Bible thumping. Like they, you know, if you notice our choices, especially under Frank Reich, who's very, very much a, you know, a strict Christian belief type person. And that he was bringing in, you know, people that were conducive. Carson Wentz, for instance, you know, he's very much of that mold. And which was a horrible freaking choice, by the way, the most underrated quarterback of his generation. But so that's great for life, right? And making sure, because there's one thing we never have to worry about. None of our key players are going to be on the internet for fighting people in the airport. You know, they're not going to get a documentary made about them for some murder spree they undertook in the off season.
It's definitely a factor.
Yeah, that stuff is great and it's always solid. But sometimes, you know, you got to worry about championships at some point.
Yeah,
and
you want to ring off somewhere in there. Yeah,
I don't think that has anything to do with winning championships. And therefore, you know, I'll be honest with you. It wouldn't surprise me sitting in with the number four pick right now and possibly the ability to trade with the Cardinals for number three that we don't draft a quarterback. I could very easily see Chris Ballard, who loves to draft pass rushers. You know, I think it's like 9 in his last 8 drafts or something. Like, you know, then there's some great pass rushers that should go in the first round, and I think 2 that they think might go in the top 10. I see him doing that or trading away our spot late for some of solid veterans to fill some weakness, you know, position wise within the squad, and then maybe holding on, trying to get like a Hooker or someone like that in the second round or late in the first, you know, because it's not going to cost you much, and if they develop, great. If they don't, whatever, trade them away. So I think you guys have a better chance of going for and what you need to make that happen versus us, if that makes sense.
That's interesting, because I feel like this is the second year that my team is sitting there with a situation where it's almost impossible to have a really good season. They're just not spending. I mean, just They're not. What is the plan? Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke. That's the current. Those two, as we sit here today, I might be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. As we sit here today, neither one of those guys cracks the top 30 quarterbacks on the planet.
Right.
Right? Like, what exactly is your plan? How are you going to win with this setup?
Well, I would argue, you know, we might end up with, and don't get me wrong, I love me some Gardner Minshew. Like, I think he's a blast, you know, and great guy to have as your number two, I think, you know, yeah. Or at least, you know, good. Yeah. Yeah. And but, you know, depending on what moves we make, he could be, you know, mentor to Hooker or a BYU quarterback or somebody like that.
Right.
And right. When you couple that with the Colts, just never, they got lucky right before with in the wide receiver position. But also, a lot of those people were really performing under Peyton Manning. Like, again, yeah, that's yeah. age-old stuff. Yeah, so yeah. Marvin, you know, Harrison and these guys that did work out that weren't, you know, going to cost you a lot to get, that doesn't hardly ever happen. And we're sitting here with, you know, Michael Pittman. Like, great, he's great, but he's not a true – I don't think he's a, you know, an elevating number one. He would be awesome as a number two. But for right. some reason, we will never go for, and we've passed up, you know, guys that already proven themselves in the league, all because Ballard just doesn't like to give up anything. Like, he just, he's, you know, he just doesn't like to take chances that way. And a lot of people praise him for being conservative and smart that way, and they think it pays off in the long run. But he's been here for a while, and I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's right. I see. It's funny because I generally agree with that concept of you don't want to trade away a lot of capital to take a shot at a thing, you know, mm-hmm. as a generalization. But I'm pissed that my team's not doing it right now. Like, you take a swing at something.
Don't you, when know? You reach a point like where our two teams are, where at a certain point you got to. I mean, you got to.
Right.
And, you know, we have a mediocre receiving core, and we might be, you know, we might have Gardner Minshew under center. Like, that's not a good combination. You got to have one or the other. You either got to have, you know, put him in a situation that Jalen Hurts had, fine, you know, where you can be a good quarterback, but the team is awesome around you, and you have plenty of talented people to throw to. You know, you can't have both, and I think that's where we both are right now. So I don't know. Whoever decides to gamble first is going to win that argument.
All right, let's do this segment here. That's a friend of the show, Aqib Talib.
Nice.
I'm going to give my kudos to the Carolina Panthers because they are doing the thing this year that I wish my team was doing. They trade a lot of capital, and they're going to get the quarterback, right? Like, that's what they did. They traded up with the Bears. They're taking a swing. That's what I want from my team. Like, it might fail, but at least I know you're – at the bat, swinging it hard, you know? Enough of this, like, pray for a single. I'm tired of singles. Fucking Amen. Hit it out of the park once in a while.
Amen.
So it may or may not work. It may or may not. It may be too expensive in the long run, but they're taking a swing at changing the arc of the franchise and the face of the team. And, you know, just the fucking program is going to look different this year. And that's something that it's good to do when your team has kind of been floundering around in mediocre to disappointing land for several years. Like, yeah. Take a swing.
I mean, you got to, or chances are nothing will change.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And how far can they fall, to be honest? I mean,
yeah, right. Whatever. You pick a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. If it doesn't work out, it's not like you weren't making a decision that's a reasonable one, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I got to give kudos to, you know, and I get, like, this isn't necessarily topical right now, but it was this year, Jeff Saturday.
Oh.
For what you would think. I'm going to give him kudos for – being brave enough to make a decision that forever, forever, for the rest of his career as an analyst, losing all credibility to be able to chastise decisions by other head coaches in the league. Like, you know, he stepped in there and boy, it didn't work out. So can you imagine? I mean, it's like Amber Heard trying to be an analyst on Being a Good Girlfriend. Like, you can't, no one's going to believe anything she says.
That's a really funny construct. Yeah, you're right. This is a risky play that didn't work out for Jeff, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was comfortable, right? He had it good. You know, he was an admired figure in the sport and a great analyst, and he was, you know, on all the big stuff. And now he has that one thing where everybody's like, shut the fuck up, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you won one game, you know. Like.
The biggest comeback in NFL history. Oh, yeah. That's a tough one. I met Jeff very briefly a couple times. Did you run around with him at some point in the Pat McAfee era?
I stood next to him a couple of times. This is my, I have quite a story on my connection with Jeff Saturday. When I was still a detective for the Indiana State Police here, I was also doing comedy, so I was in that world, and I was at the time working undercover, you know, in our undercover unit, and I get a call one day from one of my best friends from high school, who is now the chief of a certain police department, a mid-sized police department in Indiana, and he says, hey, I need some help, and I'm like, with what? And he says, well, I guess, you know, this is back in the day when Jeff Saturday would come on during the season every Tuesday on the Bob and Tom show. And, you know, Pat McAfee ended up stepping into that place after he left. But I guess he says, well, Jeff Saturday was on Bob and Tom, you know, Tuesday. And he somehow he let slip that our town has 3 massage parlors that are given happy endings. and he didn't say it like he goes there, but, you know, it was the buzz in the locker room, evidently. You can go to any one of these 3 joints in this town, and there's happy endings to be had. So he's like, so now people are calling the mayor's office like crazy, like, you got to shut this down. You know, they got torches burning there. They're through the streets. So he's like,
he mentioned which ones they are.
I think, if I recall, he had mentioned at least one of them by name. like I couldn't believe he would do this. But these people knew, and they wanted them gone. So he's like, I need to get some undercover guys to go in there and, you know, prove that this is going on. And, you know, so we can build the case. And I was like, well, I probably know at least one of the guys in our group that would be willing to do that. and I grabbed my 2 other buddies, and I'm like, hey, here's an interesting assignment. You know, usually we're just out buying meth and stuff. It's like, hey, we can go into these massage parlors and see if they're giving happy endings. And we did. We each had to get, one from each place, so it would total 3 from each place, and the prosecutor would have a case built. And probably my one of my more enjoyable assignments.
That's hilarious. That sounds like the way that we envision police work, but it's not really how it works.
Right. It had never worked that way in my career. Yeah. So I'm forever like grateful to Jeff Saturday. he did a lot for me in that period of my career. So that's my connection to Jeff Saturday.
Man. Yeah. So what happened? Were they shut down?
They were shut down temporarily and then back up within 2 months, I think. So my buddy was like, well, I'm just going to wash my hands.
They go to a different place. They have new branding.
Bring in new people. They put it all on the employees. Of course, they can never tie it to ownership because who's the owner? Yeah, right. It's all overseas under the table stuff. So, yeah, they were back up and running, evidently. And
But that's the real nature of police work, right? It's like a whack-a-mole game. Yeah, right.
For sure.
You shut down this meth lab, and then
there's 3 more. Yep.
Wow, it's so interesting.
All because of Jeff Saturday. It's so crazy to me.
I got I have a signed Jeff Saturday jersey. When I was at the years ago, Bob and Tom used to go to the Bahamas for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to go the year that the Colts beat the Bears, and it was super fun because it's a room full of 200 people. About 190 of them are Colts fans, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I don't know if you remember, but the first play of the game was Devin Hester running back the opening kickoff.
Oh yes, you can hear
a fucking pin drop in this place. Like Becky Kavoyan is wearing her blue Colts boots, and everyone was like, "What the fuck?" Everyone, was, you know. And then to watch them like come back, it was such a fun day. It was so I was hanging with Todd Snyder. I watched the Super Bowl with Todd Snyder, one of my musical heroes. Yeah.
Rock on. I love me some Todd Snyder.
Me too. Drinking beer with Todd and watching football. It was so fun. But it was one of the sponsors was a sandwich company in Indy. I forget. What's the local chain? That's like, they've got like 15 of them, but it's kind of localish. Anyway, the guy who owned that, the guy who owned that goes, if the Colts win this game, I know Jeff Saturday, I'm gonna get you a signed Saturday. I go, this is not a bet. This is just gonna happen. If it happens, I go, yeah, count me in. And he totally followed through. I like it. It's too Kostocki signed Jeff Saturday.
Oh man. I like all your people watching. They're Bob and Tom people, right?
Most of them.
So, Bob Kavoyan, you know, a hero of mine, obviously. Yeah. He and Tom both, but Bob particularly because he was the challenge, you know, to get on the show as a regular. You had to get Bob's thumb up, and he wasn't so easy to please or as easy to please as Tom. And so, you know, you would sit there and you'd wait until he would laugh once, and then you'd be like, okay, here we go. And you know, I think it was my second time on. Finally, Bob gave me the pass, and I was like, okay, cool. And then I got to hang with him intimately the week of Indy 500 one year because Pat McAfee had rented this cool ass RV thing, and he and I stayed in it in the parking lot where Bob Kavoyan's camp is with him and his friends. And so we were playing euchre with him, and you know, really got to know Bob, and I'm like, ah, it's so cool, you know, getting to know one of my heroes. And at one point, Bob had Yingling in his cooler, and here in Indiana, you couldn't get Yingling as a beer; you had to go to Ohio, was our closest place to get it, and it was my favorite beer at the time. And I'm like, oh, it's your favorite beer too, and he's like, yeah. And so we bonded over this Yingling experience. And at one point, he just walks by me and he goes, hey, Todd, can I put he goes, Todd, I put some Yingling in your cooler. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, he just gave me, you know, Yingling to drink. And cool. So I wouldn't let anybody else drink this Yingling. It was only mine. This is my Bob Kavoyan Yingling, you know, and I drank like a whole case of this shit over the course of a couple of days. And then the third day comes around and Bob comes up and he goes, hey, Todd, can I get to your cooler? I need to get my Yingling out of there. I've got room now for it. And I was like, what? I thought he was gifting it to me. He just needed to keep it cold because he didn't have enough cooler space. And it's not like you could go down to the liquor store and get more. He put this back for this week. And now he's out of Yingling because I selfishly drank every damn one of them. And he was not happy with me. Not happy at all.
That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Like if
he has to understand. He thought, you know,
I tried to explain it, but he was not a happy man.
It sounds like a gift.
Yeah, not a happy man.
Oldest brewery in America, Yingling.
Yeah, yeah. It's truly my favorite beer. Like, it's my go-to. Thank goodness we can get it here now.
That's one of the last local things. You have to kind of be near Pennsylvania to get your Yingling in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's do a couple quiz questions. I didn't prep you for this. You'll be fine.
Oh, boy.
All right, kids. Put your thinking caps on. It's quiz time.
This is not me lording information over you. This is not stuff I would have known. This is stuff I happened to see this week. And it's a jumping off point to have a little chat about some things.
Okay. This is really going to show people how much my studying of NFL.
I think I would have known none of these, so don't worry.
Okay.
This is just, I think these are interesting facts. All right. The team with the longest streak without a first round quarterback in the draft.
The longest streak with an NFL first round. Let me go against what I would think. Let me say the Vikings.
Okay. Let's see if we have any guesses from the peanut gallery. We got a couple characters who like to chime in here. Ron Milford said New England. What's up, Ron? Good to see you, buddy. And Marge is in here. Cool. What's up, Mo?
New England's a good choice. That's probably right.
New England does seem like a good answer. The answer I've got here is the New Orleans Saints.
Wow, really?
Not since 1971 when they drafted Archie Manning.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
And 71 is 50 years ago.
Wow. I would have never.
That's crazy.
Never thought that was
there. There are some that have been, you know, 20, 30 years, but they're far and away by themselves out. Longest streak without a first round quarterback.
That is crazy. What a warrior Archie Manning was too, by the way. I bet Cooper's boy comes up and I bet you he's a throwback to that guy.
We'll see. All right. Current longest streak without a first round pick. And this one is going to be an all-time record if they continue this year with seven. Their seventh year without a first round pick, assuming they don't trade up into the first round this year,
right?
They will set a record.
I think I want to go like old franchise, but let's say, the Tennessee Titans.
Ron Milford chimes in with New England again. It's the F them picks team, the Los Angeles Rams.
Really?
They keep trading away their picks.
Yeah.
These players, these big name players. They did it. They did what I want my team to do. They put the gas on. They're like, we're going to pay for this later, but right now we're going to try to fucking win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they did it, man. They put together a hell of a team with some scary defensive players and some offensive superstars, and they paid through the nose and they did it, man. They brought in Jalen Ramsey and paid all their guys, and now they're paying the price. That team's fucking terrible all of a sudden. And
I know, but
it's going to happen to the Bucks too. But I wish my team would do this. Like, take this arc, build an arc, and just go up and take a swing. And you'll be coming down, but let's do it. Enough of this mediocrity.
And theoretically, you could just keep running that cycle, right? You'd have your great four-year run, and then your terrible four-year run.
Yeah,
and just, then you but pay at least, for it. At least you don't go through these decades of sadness, you know? So
I think there's hesitation in the organizations to do this because it's unpleasing to the season ticket holders on the down run,
right?
But I think we're sophisticated fans at this point. We would much rather have that cycle than we're going to be 7-9 again forever.
I mean, I would take that right now in a heartbeat, you know?
Yeah, right. Decades of sadness, Ron says. Vikings, that's his team. All right, let's see. We close out on one or more of these. Those are the two that I thought were most interesting. This is kind of fun. Bryce Young has a chance of breaking a long streak because the last Heisman-winning quarterback to win a Super Bowl was...
Wow, I
know, right? I would have never got
no
this.
Idea.
In my head, I was like, what, dude?
I'm trying to, yeah.
You won't, here's a hint, you won't believe how long it's been. It's
ridiculous. Oh, really?
It seems like it would happen fairly often.
Well, let me say Unitas then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the right kind of guess.
Okay.
Roger Staubach.
Oh, wow. Yeah, really?
Right? I know, right?
Okay, well, man.
Because in my head, I'm like, that's part of the machine. You got to get these big shot quarterbacks and then build around them and kind of get all the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a minute since we've had one of that storyline. You know?
Yeah, it's so crazy that one doesn't equate to the other.
Like, right.
You would think that would be the natural progression of things.
Right.
But I guess, is it because, you know, typically whoever has the top four picks is recovering from a decade of sadness and you're entering a horrible situation?
Sorry for the first few years. Yeah. And probably it speaks a little bit to how hard it is to nail down these, you know, these picks, you know?
Yeah.
This is another stat that I happen to see because we think, you know, you sometimes hear that even first round quarterbacks are a coin flip, whether they hit. And the stat that I saw, you can quibble with the idea of how they measure this, but they say it's 37% that you hit on a first round quarterback because that's the percentage that signs a second contract with their same team.
Wow.
So that's how they measure long-term quarterback success.
I guess this is,
you can quibble over that, but it does tell you that it's less than half.
Yeah, I mean, that's as good a measuring stick as any, I assume, because if you were really thriving, they're not going to let you go, probably.
Right.
So, wow, that's an incredibly low percentage.
I know, right? Isn't it?
And I think that these people like Ballard and these guys that have that school of thought that, you know, you don't necessarily create championships from the draft, you know, there's probably something to it then statistically, you know, with stats like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, hey, we got to run, but I want to give you a sec to tell us about you and what you're doing podcast-wise, man. I just had a short chat with you about this, but I don't want to fuck it up. You tell the people what you're doing, man.
Yeah, I tell you what, things are evolving, like, in the present right now for me. One thing I can't talk about yet, but it's everything I have is constantly updated on toddmccomas.com, my website, and I have a meeting tomorrow. You know, I'm really – the past couple years, my buddy and I, Stuart Huff, have been neck deep in this documentary series that we put together and pitched, and it got picked up. And there's a meeting with Netflix and the production company we're partnered with, and that's end of this week. So we have a meeting tomorrow to finalize our – pitch materials and get our, they got to get Stuart and I prepped because evidently we have to talk to Netflix executives now. So if that happens, as things can be released on that, it will be on my website. And I have some interesting podcast things that are coming up. But my baby podcast, it's always been my baby, is my true crime podcast 1041. And that has been on hiatus because some other ventures paid me to put it on hiatus. And that is up now, and I am rebranding it, and I'm rebranding it and bringing on a partner, and we're going to blow it up, make it bigger and better, a little more traditional true crime than it has been, and really diving into cases and using our skill sets. You know, she has a lot of experience in crime. I do too. And it should be great. Should be great.
I love it, man. It's great to talk to you. Go check him out, toddmccomas.com. They'll get you the links to everything that's going on with Todd. A thoughtful dude, a funny dude, and a former cop. What a perfect combination of things to be a true crime podcaster and documentarian. You're a documentarian.
I know. I can't believe it. Like,
I'm saying that right?
Yes. And I guess that's an old school term, but I'm using it. Like, I want to put that on all my stuff. I feel bad about putting it up there yet because people are like, prove it, you know. So once they can see it, that's all you're going to see from me. Todd McComas, documentarian.com. That'll be my new website.
I like it. I'm doing a couple shows coming up. I'll be in Modesto here in a couple of weeks, and now I'm heading to Louisville, and I may or may not be doing some recording for a thing down there. So check me out. I'm at kostaki.com. I'm easy to find as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We love you. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.